Welcome to the Daily Wrap-Up, a concise show dedicated to bringing you the most relevant independent news as we see it from the last 24 hours.
Welcome. Thank you for joining me today. I'm going to try to make this a little bit of a shorter show today. I'm going to end with after the show, going to do a two-layer of research and review for those that want to hang around, address some questions, and talk about some of the things we're going to get into. But today's a little bit of a follow-up of some stories we recently talked about in regard to Syria, a kind of a I-told-you-so moment about what's currently happening in Yemen, as I'm sure you can all guess what's currently happening in Yemen. And, a brief touch on some of the points as far as, the government shutdown and how it's probably really not a bad thing, and many other things we can get into. But thank you all for joining me today. I know plenty of people are getting caught up in the holiday cheer, hopefully, and a lot of the family stuff going on. So I imagine traffic for these kind of shows will be slower, but hopefully those that miss it can, pick this up as they get past the holiday season. Because I really hope people are taking a moment to appreciate their family, enjoy the moment in Christmas or whatever holiday you're celebrating, or just enjoying the hopeful, the kindness that seems to come along with this holiday, which I really do enjoy, regardless of what your ideology may be. But so let's get into it for the first one today. This is something that is definitely an important topic, but it's not the idea of the shutdown is something they try to force on us every time as the, such an important thing and everybody should be afraid. What are we going to do without the government? Well, guess what? The same thing we do every day. It's going to continue on the same way because it's all the same people doing all the same things. We don't need that group of men and women standing around telling us what we should be doing with our time. That's my opinion. The reality is nothing ultimately changes when they shut down. They want us to think it does. But it's an important point for a couple of reasons. Now, this is an article from Zero Hedge entitled, "Shutdown Begins as Trump Democrats Wrestle Over Border Wall." Because that's really what this is coming down to. And truthfully, there's both sides trying to pin this on the other. It's both of them. On both sides. Too specifically, I would say Trump and Schumer. Both of them acting juvenile and acting like, pampered children that don't want to give up what they want. And it all comes down to a political agenda, personally, as I see it, that they want to make sure that they can deliver on one of these sides' promises. And there's a lot of misinformation going around this whole thing. But ultimately, for those that are unaware, the concept is between the $7 billion for the border wall that Trump wants, that he said he's not going to do anything unless he gets, and then Schumer leading the Democrats on the other side saying, no way, no how, we're not going to let it happen. So they're both equally responsible for this. Now, the Senate, after this passed the House of Representatives, the Senate version did offer a smaller $1.3 billion amount for border security, but apparently none of it for the wall, which I'm sure they could stipulate that, but it's kind of up to them to how they want to spend this, as we always can see with the way the government operates. Now, Senate negotiators from both parties have agreed to keep talking right up until today. And I was trying to, tough out some of this C-SPAN coverage that I'm sure none of you guys want to watch that is wildly boring. That they're today still actually talking about this because the government's officially shut down to some degree today. It's partial. 15 departments, a dozen agencies. Oh my God. Really not a big deal, I would imagine. I'm sure there's some people inconvenienced. There's some government workers that are having to work without currently being paid. However, they're going to be paid once the government kicks back up, as it always does. So really nothing changes. But they want you to think that this is such a big deal. And I argue that may be a lot of ways this kind of political theater in order to slide all these different things in, such as the anti-BDS bill that we were just talking about, that we may wake up tomorrow and find out has been passed because we had to bring back the government. But the reality is that the negotiators are today meeting to basically go back and forth and trying to keep, to find an agreement to bring this back. But when you watch this, it's very hard to watch because you have, as always, two incredibly different narratives. You got Mitch McConnell getting up and saying, and he has a good point that he says that months ago, the Democrats offered about five times this much for border security. And now they're quibbling over, a fifth of the amount just because it's about Trump's wall. And I'm just as equally, I don't like the idea of a wall. One, because it also keeps things in. But the point of this is that it comes down to the fact that they don't want to agree with it because it's Trump's thing. It's a political move, as all of this stuff is. But on the same and the flip, we have Donald Trump, who agreed to a certain amount before, is now all of a sudden holding back for this larger amount. It's all politics. This has nothing to do with what's best for you as an American, despite the fact that many of you have been aggressively propagandized to think all of a sudden we need this massive border structure to stop what, I'm not going to get into that topic. But the point is, this is going to stay today, I imagine. They're probably, if anything does happen, it's going to be a concession from both sides. They're going to be a little bit less amount for the wall. Trump will say okay, but they'll give in a little bit as well, and it'll open back up, and nothing will change, and they'll probably all include a bunch of horrible, constitution-threatening little sink bills that get shot in at the last second. It always happens because we have to pass this. Now, they give a 24-hour notice if they're going to do a vote, lacking the I think it's called a quorum, the right amount of people that need to be there to actually vote on something. So reality is that most people probably won't even come back. They'll be able to vote with a limited amount of people. It's a very dangerous situation, thinking about what they can accomplish. Looking at all the bills they recently passed, there's a picture of Trump signing all these different things. One of them I looked into fund is in regard to a trade deal with Israel, by the way. Funny how that doesn't get talked about in the media. But, you know, I think you can imagine why. But ultimately, as you can tell, I don't think the government shutdown is something we should even care about, personally. I think you know my opinions in that regard anyway. But truly, even those that believe in our democracy can see that nothing really ultimately changes. Because guess what? The people that are actually out there doing things are you and I, not the people that are pointing at us and telling us what to do. So maybe this will hopefully open people's eyes. I often think they really don't like these shutdowns because it does open people's eyes to the reality that, hey, the sun rose. The world's still working. Things happen without the government. Big surprise. But let's move on to some much more important things, because I do think the government shutdown topic in a lot of ways is, as always, being used to take your attention away from many more important things. Now, in regard to Syria, this is an article coming from South Front that is important for a couple of different reasons. This is entitled, SDF Blames Trump for New Wave of ISIS Attacks. You know, the defeated ISIS that's still attacking in Hanjin. And now this is important because obviously the Syrian Democratic Forces, the absurdly named Syrian Democratic Forces, you know, the moderate rebels, the terrorists that were the U.S. was supporting and still is, I'm pretty sure is the case, even though they're claiming they're going to be leaving. Now, understand, again, as I said yesterday, these are just words. They haven't left. They're still there. Things are still happening. Even though people, most people that have, you know, Trump supporters are moving on today thinking, oh, they're left already. They're gone. Syria's over. Well, it's not. It's still happening. And we're seeing now that the SDF that they used to be working with, they're now blaming them for waves of ISIS attacks. Very interesting. So today, it is in fact being reported that ISIS fighters launched several new counterattacks inside the town of Hanjin in middle Euphrates River Valley, the area that we've talked about quite a lot, actually. Now, according to the Syrian Democratic Forces, the SDF, the group blamed U.S. President Donald Trump specifically for these attacks in a statement that they said that they are that it's a direct reflection in their eyes of his decision to withdraw American forces from Syria. They said, quote, the terrorist organization took this chance to reorganize its troops and intensify its terrorist attacks on the positions of our forces, which is just, you know, it's just I find it humorous to point out the idea that, yeah, you know, that group that was defeated apparently is still. And I know what people will say. It's all semantics. But it's not about semantics when you come out in front of the entire world and say defeated. We win. We're leaving. Now, people will argue, well, yes, 99% is what's defeat. But these are numbers coming directly from U.S. intelligence. And I would argue it's clearly not 99% of ISIS has been defeated, as I'll get to it. Well, I mean, here's the images of something we've looked at many times. This is the area we're talking about. Actually, just north of that little gray sliver there is Hajin, what we're talking about. This is the area on the east of the Euphrates that has been a little pocket of ISIS that has existed there from the beginning, tucked in neatly into U.S. territory. So ask yourself how, of all these things, if they ever intended to defeat ISIS, would they allow this pocket of ISIS, as well as others, that were snug right inside U.S. territory? This is the area we're currently talking about. So clearly they're still there because they're now lashing out and attacking SDF forces. This is important to recognize. A little further back, you can see the area right there we're talking about, the little gray sliver right there. This is the one of the strongholds, in addition to Al-Tanf, which is the area that's right above that little green area at the bottom, right at the border between Jordan, Iraq, and Syria, which is another stronghold for ISIS, which is also another U.S.-controlled area. Surprise? You know, coincidence? Probably not. I would say it's not, but come to your own conclusions. But the reality here is that this is another ISIS territory that still exists and they're still lashing out. And I would say very clearly because they were allowed to continue. Just contradicting that ridiculous concept that they were defeated and we won and it's over. Not semantics, it's just a lie. But in general now, the SDF are blaming the U.S. for this. And despite blaming them in general, the SDF has acknowledged that its forces were able to actually repel the attacks with the support of U.S.-led coalition, whose warplanes conducted 82 airstrikes on the terrorist group in the last 24 hours. Just interesting to note, this idea that we're supposedly pulling back and the U.S.-led coalition just conducted 82 airstrikes in the last 24 hours. Now, think about this as well when we're going to get into Yemen. These ideas of claims of things happening don't really seem to pan out usually because people move on and think that it's over. That's mostly what I would think they want. Now, as of today, U.S. troops are still patrolling on the Turkish border in Altamp. And just yesterday, new U.S. war materials were just sent coming from Iraq. They just sent in new shipments of stuff. And it's like, we have to see that this is not really coming to an end. And I think most that have been aware from before this have known that this is how it's been happening. They make these claims. They maybe pull out a couple of token people, but it continues. They're not leaving. And I think we need to recognize that. You may see some troops come out to meet, maybe even all U.S. troops. But that doesn't end the funding of U.S. extremists that they've funded, armed, and protected. It doesn't stop their contracting of military contractors, like the Blackwater kind of thing. You know, they're not U.S. military. That's the way they sidestep that. And of course, as the point is, ISIS is still attacking. So not really defeated. And of course, it seems that the Syrian government is seeking to prepare and position itself in order to capitalize on the potential pullout of U.S. troops, you know, should it actually happen. And I think that regardless of whether it does, we're going to see them try to take advantage of this. Now, this is another article coming from South Front as well, entitled Syrian Government Forces Prepare for Anti-ISIS Operation in Homs Deir Ezzor Desert. Now, this is clearly them trying to take advantage of this. Now, this flies in the face of all the claims of, you know, what Syrian government does without U.S. there to stop them from murdering everybody, when in reality, they're just fighting away all of the U.S.-backed extremists that have been protected this entire time, now that they finally can in these specific areas. Now, the Syrian government forces are preparing for a military operation or operations against ISIS cells in the Homs Deir Ezzor Desert, this area between basically Homs on the left and then the two other points that I just showed you, and being deployed in the area specifically in order to strengthen Syrian army troops operating there. And this is according to pro-government sources. Now, after the liberation of the area of Al-Safa by the Syrian government, the Homs Deir Ezzor Desert, including the U.S.-controlled area of Al-Tanf, remained the key area where ISIS cells operated in the western bank of the Euphrates River. Again, pointing out very clearly that they were being protected in this area. Now, it has been repeatedly exposed that ISIS units use these U.S.-controlled areas, and Al-Tanf specifically, as a safe haven to avoid attacks from Syrian government forces. Now, when the evaluation of U.S. forces from the area is expected, or excuse me, the evacuation is expected, if it does happen, and I'm still not even fully sold that that is even going to happen, the Damascus government is preparing to deliver a final attack, as it were, to finish out these ISIS areas. Now, it'll be very interesting and revealing to see if these guys are just completely annihilated and actually defeated once the U.S. finally pulls themselves out of the way. Well, it'll be interesting to find out. Regardless, we can see that Syria is capitalizing on this shift in rhetoric, because if the U.S. comes full back in to try to stop them, maybe, you know, short of a false flag attack, which may happen like it did last time, It clearly makes it seem like they didn't mean what they said. So we'll have to see how it plays out. But I think you can tell clearly that I don't think that they're really ever going to leave this area. Now, on that note, a great article from Global Research entitled "The Trump Administration Isn't Ending the Wars in Syria or Yemen. It's only shifting and fighting over strategy." Now, shifting strategy is what we just talked about, you know, funding other proxies instead of actually being there, and fighting over is in regard to, you know, Israel, Turkey, U.S., kind of, you know, who is going to be the one doing what. And that's what it comes back to, as we've talked about recently. Now, military failures, as this article begins, and excessive expenditures have made direct war campaigns highly unpopular. And as Caitlin would point out, you know, coffins coming back with American flags on them. People don't like to see this. Made them unpopular for the U.S. following Iraq and Afghanistan. You know, the wars that are still ongoing, even though they pretend they're going to be pulling out of Afghanistan. Again, I don't think that'll happen either, but hopefully it does. Now, since then, the U.S.'s strategy post-war on terror has been to pursue just covert strategies, which is what we're always pointing out. These have been carried out through proxy wars, you know, funding extreme moderate rebels, support of Western-backed rebel groups, and then, of course, media censorship and manipulation, and maintaining or increasing support and funding to NATO and GCC allies and Israel and on and on. Now, which this show that ultimately we see no signs of reducing here, whether or not the U.S. troops actually get pulled out. This is clear because they're continuing to ramp up their efforts in regard to these proxy efforts, which is something I'm trying to drive home for people. Just because there's no troops there, that's great. I'm happy to see that no more American, you know, soldiers that are duped and thinking they're doing the right thing are going to lose their lives. But it doesn't change the fact that this war is not over. And there's, as we just pointed out, new military shipments just came in yesterday. Now, as I pointed out yesterday, and as the title suggests, whether Israel, Turkey, or the U.S., or all three for that matter, are maintaining the destabilization of Syria, as is the stated goal in past documents, and in more than one slip-up, I might add, by the U.S., it is simply a change in strategy, in appearance, not ending the illegal invasion and occupation of a sovereign nation. And as I pointed out yesterday, the White House said on Wednesday that the move to remove these troops does not signify the end of the campaign or a halt to work to the work they're doing in the global coalition or the war-torn country, war-torn because of their illegal occupation. That's very clear, said by the White House, but you won't hear that talked about. And now you would think that the media, who's trying to point out this stuff, how bad it is that he's doing this, would show you this and say, well, it looks like he's still staying there. Ask yourself why a media content or intent on trying to point this out would not include the fact that the White House just said, well, guess what? We're not leaving. Think about that. And as I said as well, Netanyahu was quoted by numerous publications saying the U.S. administration has told me that it was the president's intention to pull these troops out. And they clarified that they have many other ways to wield their influence in this arena. That's pretty damn clear. So I wanted to make sure I reiterated that. Now, as the article rightly points out, and as I have been going over for a week in regard to Yemen, and something few have chosen to discuss for some unknowable reason, when the U.S. Senate voted last week to end, you know, U.S. support for the war in Yemen, which I quote because that's clearly not what I think it was going to do with Resolution 54. And, you know, arguably there was so many loopholes involved that it wouldn't have happened. That a buried provision in the House and Rules Committee's Agricultural Improvement Act of 2018, or the Farm Bill, would block any vote or further discussion of the U.S. involvement in the war in Yemen. And of course, the point that just on Thursday, as I knew would happen, Trump signed that bill into law. So just so those that were not up on the situation, even that did pass, but Trump could have vetoed it. He could have said, no, this is dishonest. You're blocking things about Yemen. Nope, signed into law. So now that's past us. Now that's a pretty flagrant violation of our Constitution, of the law in general. Now the U.S. pushed for a UN-brokered ceasefire in Yemen, as we've continued to talk about, like its withdrawal from Syria, comes after 4 years of just massive losses by the U.S.-backed Saudi coalition. Losses, I might add, at the hands of one of the most impoverished nations on the planet, by sheer force of will. Of course, impoverished due to ceaseless U.S. intervention dating back decades, as Yemen actually should be one of the richest nations on Earth, considering its bountiful and varied resources. But as we've seen in places like Africa, it's because of these interventions that they are basically taking over and just raping them of the resources. Now, this ceasefire in Yemen, you know, this fake ceasefire, is being pushed by the U.S. and the Saudis, even in the midst of continuing aggression against Yemen, by the U.S.-backed Saudi coalition in Yemen over these past few days. Now, including the U.S., basically, we've talked about this so many times in regard to the things that they've said, the promises they've made. And right after this, I even had comments coming at me saying, oh, well, they said it was going to be Tuesday, so just wait. Well, we're past Tuesday, and guess what? U.S.-Saudi joint launches of warplanes and raids have been ongoing against the Sana'a International Airport. Now, the airport, mind you, which is an important factor for the Houthi rebels, they tried to make that to end the war in this area for the people. And it's clear they didn't want to do that. And right up until today, we're seeing U.S.-Saudi bombs hitting the airport, well past the proposed ceasefire that Gutierrez of the UN said would happen this last Tuesday. And of course, well past the 30 days that Madison Pompeo said were going to end afterward. Now, these are flagrant violations of this feigned ceasefire that the U.S. coalition is trying to sell to those basically simply not paying attention. This is similar to what we've seen on ceasefires in Syria and every other place for that matter that the U.S. pretends to come to this agreement, when in reality, in the back end, they're trying to continue to weaken the group so they can continue attacking. Now, attempts at holding to the ceasefire continue to be impeded, holding by the Houthis, by the way, which they're actually still trying to maintain, continue to be impeded diplomatically and militarily by Saudi Arabia and the United States, continually reneging on the agreement with its attacks. It's clear that ultimately they hope that this pretend ceasefire will disarm the Yemeni forces, which I said before. That's why I was very nervous about the fact that they were allowing the UN to take control or partial control of Hodeidah and pull out their forces, because I knew this was going to happen based on our own history. And of course, it would allow for them an easier final offensive against Hodeidah. Now, the US and Saudi Arabia also hope to malign the terms of this so-called truce to specify condemnation of Iran, of course, as allegedly playing a role in the prolonged conflict, ignoring their illegal invasion to begin with. Now, the draft resolution, under U.S. pressure, now basically condemns both Iranian support and unmanned aerial vehicle attacks by the Houthis against neighboring countries. Now, of course, Russia has rejected the draft resolution on these terms. I would argue that's likely even the point of why they included this. So they could say, when somebody like me points to the fact, well, they've been attacking the whole time, they can say, oh, well, they didn't agree with the ceasefire. But you've been attacking well before this was ever came to pass. They've been attacking since the beginning of this so-called peace talks. Now, despite the language, the Yemeni popular forces, the Houthis, agreed to respect the terms of the ceasefire, responding only to foil the aggression launched by the Western-supported Gulf coalition, saying they are, quote, committed to the ceasefire in Hodeidah, complicated by the continued attacks and violations by the Saudis, which show you clearly that even as they're being bombed, the Houthis are trying to maintain some semblance of peace to protect the people. That sounds like a real leadership to me. But as always, come to your own conclusions. It's pretty hard to ignore. Now, the army spokesman added that more than mortar shells have been fired at Hodeidah's residential areas, mind you, in violation of the ceasefire, including the U.S.-Saudi launch of 26 airstrikes across various locations in the last 24 hours. Residential areas. I mean, this is old news. This is every single day they continue to bomb residential areas, families, churches, water installation. I mean, everything, the average people they're bombing, 26 airstrikes in the last 24 hours. Why is there no media standing up and saying, hey, what about the ceasefire you promised? Why aren't you doing anything about Saudi Arabia murdering families in the last 24 hours? You won't, because they're part of it, or at least complicit, or being told not to talk about it, which makes them complicit. This is a very disgusting thing to realize, that both your media and your government are okay with this happening. They're okay knowing that they slipped in this fake thing into a farm bill to allow them to not even talk about it in Congress. This is the reality of the situation. And I hope people can really see that this was the plan from the very beginning. And I'm not a pessimist for pointing out that I thought this would happen, because this is what always happens, because they had no intention of actually honoring the claims that they make, just like the treaties they pull out of and the deals that they break. I'm talking about the oligarchy that has hijacked this country. We are the United States, you and I, the Americans. They are the people that are pretending to be our leaders and doing things for themselves and the ruling class that have nothing to do with what we actually want. It's a sad thing to realize, but hopefully people can wake up to this. So the bottom line is they're still bombing Yemen. So much for the immediate ceasefire they talked about. I'd love to see other people point this out. And I should also point out, in regard to Syria, the sheer insanity of those like Lindsey Graham and many others, claiming that Congress must not allow the president to end war without their approval, yet will clearly, and he has many times, ignored any escalation of war, any invasion, any bombing, which is what Congress is supposed to do. In fact, as the commander-in-chief, the president actually does have the authority to pull them out. However, he doesn't have the authority to put them in without congressional approval. So where were you then, Lindsey Graham? Or all of these people who pretend that this is such an atrocity that Trump should do this without discussing this? How dare he stop a war? How dare he save American lives? But you said nothing while he was killing American lives and threatening other lives around the world. Regardless of how noble the cause you may think it was, that was a violation of our Constitution. But now they care. It just is amazing to see the alignment of politics and the media in the mainstream when it comes to war. All of a sudden, they're all on the same team, and that should show you everything you need to know today. Now, also an important point is that Brett McGurk apparently just resigned, stating that it has to do with Trump's claims to be pulling out of Syria, which, again, it's not really stopping. So I'm really wondering what they're trying to sell to us here. Remember, Brett McGurk's the one that openly talked about how Idlib was the last Al-Qaeda stronghold while the U.S. government was saying, no, 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 those are moderate rebels. They're on our side. Don't worry. We're going to protect them. But guess what? They're Hayat al-Sham, al-Nusra terrorists is what they are. And so it's weird. I'm not sure how to where to place his resignation in all this, that he's leaving because of Trump's decision. I think this is a political move. I really do. Whatever Brett McGurk's trying to accomplish or the larger thing, I think they're trying to sell to us that there's division here. That, oh my God, he's leaving Syria when he's really not. When you simply take a moment to look at it. So hopefully people can show some discernment here and stand outside of the two-party paradigm and start asking real questions and see how we're all being lied to. Now, the final story of the day is something I do think is very important. An excellent article, as always, from Caitlin Johnstone entitled Endless War Has Been Normalized and Everybody's Crazy. And this is something I think we can all begin to see today. I've kind of touched on a couple of points already. The absurdity of how it's normal that we're constantly warring, and yet it's bad when we even try to scale things back a little bit. How dare Trump try to talk with Russia? How dare he actually converse with Kim Jong-un in North Korea? Remember that? How they just lost it when he talked to him. How dare he do this? How dare he scale things down with another power that's trying to potentially create war? How dare he? Now, whether he even had genuine intentions, which I think you can tell, I think usually is not the case, it's crazy to see that the way that they're acting. It is indeed crazy, and she's right. Now, she begins by saying the talking heads of the corporate state media had been almost entirely ignoring the buildup of U.S. troops in Syria and the operations they've been carrying out there. But as soon as the possibility of those troops leaving emerged, all the alarm bells started ringing, which is an excellent point to think about. They didn't even inform Americans about the buildup. They barely touched on the fact that this was happening, and now all of a sudden they want you to think that the end of it is so important that we should all know about it. Do you not see the disconnect there? If it was so important, why were you not telling anybody about it until it became, at least they pretended to end it? Very interesting. She goes on to say, endless war was considered so normal that nobody ever talked about it. Then Trump tweeted he's bringing the troops home, and now every armchair liberal in America who had no idea what occurred was 5 minutes ago is suddenly an expert on Erdogan and the YPG, which I think is such a perfect concept for today, for both Republicans and Democrats. After 2016, every Republican in the world was an expert on politics. It's just funny how these things happen, and clearly they think everything began with Trump forward. It's just funny, but what an excellent point she points out. Now, she goes on to say, Lindsey Graham, as I said earlier, who has never met an unaccountable U.S. military occupation he didn't like, is now suddenly cheerleading for congressional oversight. Not for sending troops into wars, but for pulling them out. Now, even in a marginally sane world, the fact that a nation's armed forces are engaged in daily military violence would be cause for shock and alarm. And pulling those forces out of that situation should be viewed as a return to normalcy. Instead, we're seeing the exact opposite. In an even marginally sane world, congressional oversight would be required to send the U.S. military to invade countries and commit acts of war, because that act, not withdrawing them, is what's abnormal. Instead, we're seeing the exact opposite. It's absolutely crazy, she says, that we feel normal about the most powerful military force in the history of civilization running around the world, invading and occupying and bombing and killing. Yet we're made to feel weird about the possibility of any part of that ending. Like, take a moment and reflect on that. Now, she uses an excellent analogy about how all of us are just essentially feeling around blind in a dark room. And that no one really knows what's really going on. It's something we often say on this show. The only thing we know is that we don't really know anything. And she goes on to say that we're all just basically repeating what we're told by those who were repeating what they were told, right? Our parents tell us things all confident and we think, oh, well, they must know what they're talking about. Well, they're just repeating what they were told when they were growing up by someone who seemed authoritative and confident. She says, for most people, life is like stumbling around in a dark room. You have no idea how you got into it without even knowing what you're looking for. Then, as you're reaching around in the darkness, your hand is grasped by someone else's hand, and it says in a confident-sounding voice, "I know where to go. Come with me." The owner of the other hand doesn't know any more about the room than you do, really. They just know how to feign confidence. That's all mainstream media narratives are. Hands reaching out in the darkness of a confusing world, speaking in confident-sounding voices, and guiding you in a direction which benefits the powerful. But the more of us who learn to see through the dominant narratives and discover the underlying truths, the more hand there are to guide others away from the interests of the powerful and toward a sane society. A society in which people abhor war and embrace peace, in which people collaborate with each other and their environment, in which people overcome the challenges facing our species and create a beautiful world together. I wholeheartedly believe that. That's why we need to continue to wake people up and shake them free of this two-party lie, that it keeps them pitted and angry and at each other's throats. I greatly agree with most of what Caitlin writes about. She always has a great way of really putting her finger on the pulse. And I do believe that we can reach that point if we see past our false political differences, forced into us by the incessant squawking of a warmongering mainstream media, to the truth and commonality on the other side of that. They want us to think it's normal to starve an entire nation to death to fight a group of rebels they claim work for Iran, when in actuality they're starving an entire nation for a geostrategic control of OTODATA, as I see it. They want us to think it's normal to ignore that Israel is ethnically cleansing an entire race of people while occupying their territory, while falsely accusing U.S. rivals of acts they cannot prove. We must shake free of their efforts to indoctrinate us and see the good that I truly believe is innate in most of us. So I leave you today with an example of this attempted indoctrination that was shared with me today by one of our very own, Marshall H., in the chat right now, in hopes that you can see who in this scenario are the ones infiltrating and manipulating. I'll tell you, it's not the Russians. And in hopes that it might actually shake free just one more person. And as you saw in recent shows, the teacher that was fired for not signing an oath to Israel, the anti-BDS legislation that I think is probably going to end up being slipped into the spending bill whenever they pass this, when no one's talking about it today. This is something to be concerned about. In all the talk of threats to our democracy, even though we don't have one, this is what a real example looks like. So enjoy the video today. I love you all. Before I go, if you want to, you know, last minute something for the holidays, if you want to check it out and support this channel, truthclothing.io/collections/TLAV, question everything t-shirt. There's actually a lot of new designs on here as well. Entering in Vagabond for any of it will help support my channel. Or just check us out on Patreon or PayPal or any other place that you want to do it, or simply just be here. Talk, think, spread ideas, critically think. And as always, I love you guys. I love you all. Have a happy holidays and a Merry Christmas or whatever you want to celebrate, but be kind to each other. Get out there and celebrate kindness, positivity. And as always, question everything. Come to your own conclusions. Stay vigilant.
Want to defend Israel? Log on to 4IL, download the app, and share the truth.
The truth about Israel?
I know the truth about Israel.
It makes you angry and helpless.